This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
So to start the programme today, I'd like to introduce you to our very special guest today, Yasmin Giles, who is a professional singer and musician from Claygate, who in November will be performing in her own one-woman show. So welcome here today, Yasmin. Nice to see you on the programme. Now, when was your earliest memory of music?
Teaching myself how to play for really the first 4 years of my life before I started formal piano lessons. So basically it was just the same thing of teaching myself, really.
So were you from a musical family?
Do you know, this is the weirdest thing. My mother played piano and my father sang classical Indian ghazals.
Right.
So he would have little sessions with his musicians around playing tabla and sitar, and he would sit and sing. And it was just out of this, he had a voice that was just out of this world, you know.
So what age did you actually start playing?
At the age of three.
Really?
So, yes, at the age of three, that is basically it, yeah, and I haven't stopped since.
And was that actually having lessons at three, or just improvising when you were
totally, totally improvising. So by the time I got to seven, so I'd had 4 years of improvising, by the time I got to seven, I pretty much could play whatever was put in front of me. I just had to learn music, and then I just sped through all my exams.
And it was always the piano that attracted you?
Always. I was absolutely besotted with it, in love with it, obsessed with it. And I just found out recently, an aunt who lived with us for a couple of years at that time, and my mother said that I would come home from school and literally from the youngest age drop my bags in the hallway, no food, no drink, run to the piano and stay there for 3 to 5 hours every night. And they had to pull me off. Because I was just crazy about it.
So wonder you didn't fade away, if you weren't even having any dinner.
Can you not tell? That's why I'm not a foodie and why I don't eat, because I think that was my food. That was my food and drink. Yeah.
And what sort of things were you playing at the age of seven?
Well, it would be just stuff, you know, the shows at the time, like Wombles of Wimbledon, and any theme tune. Do you remember that?
I do.
And we used to have jingles in our day, didn't we? We had these great Beans Means Hinds and all this sort of thing. And if I heard them, I'd just go to the piano and sort of start playing. Oh, and theme tunes. I was obsessed with things like Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, so songs from films.
Mm-hmm.
And people would, a friend of my father's would bring me sheet music. And that was from about the age of 11.
And were you actually given lessons at this stage? Or?
No, so I started the lessons at seven. So when I went to school proper, then little school, then I started my lessons there.
And did you like the lessons?
Do you know what? I find it really odd now, because I do teaching now, and I find it odd how fussy the children are, because I hoovered up every type of music imaginable. I loved it all, and I still do. Classical, rock, pop, soul, jazz. It didn't bother me.
So you were you learning mainly classical at this stage?
Yes, it was all classical.
It was all classical.
Yes, excuse me. I did all the Associated Board exams from 1 to 8, and I was playing all Beethoven and all the fantastic popular pieces that we know, and that was what I was doing, and then doing the pop in my spare time.
Well, that's wonderful to hear you, that you were so enthusiastic as a child, because when I was a child I had to be dragged to the piano to do my practice, and one of my teachers actually hit me over the knuckles with a ruler if I played a wrong note.
Do you know what? I think for me, having taught as well, I think the problem with it, as it were, is that people need to do it themselves first before they have formal training. I think if you do it yourself and you enjoy it, then when you go to formal training, but I think if you start lessons and you start having to read music that you have no connection to, it becomes like a chore. And I can see that actually it was those first 4 years of me just experimenting and listening and playing things I wanted that led to my love of it, really. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So at 11 then you started the lessons, and that went on till what, 15, something like that?
So the lessons, I did all my exams between 7 and 17, on piano, as well as up to grade five on cello. So I was doing cello too.
You did the cello as well. Yeah.
So when did you actually decide you wanted to sing rather than just play the piano?
I didn't want to sing ever. I was always going to do either one of two things, which was to write film music, because I was obsessed with film music, and we used to have great film soundtracks at the time, Rocky and Taxi Driver, and do you remember all those great tunes?
Absolutely.
So that, and I had all the albums, and the other thing, if I didn't do that, the other thing was to be the musical director and piano player for somebody like Barbara Streisand or Bette Midler. Always wanted to be in the background. Always, never wanted to
be in
the
front. So when did that change then? Because obviously now you're not in the background at all, are
you?
No,
I know, sadly.
Yes. So it's your husband in the background now, isn't it?
No, it's my husband in the background. Yeah, exactly, you're right.
So when did that change then?
Well, at 11, just before I left school to go to big school. It was at big school when I was 15. That's right, because I started singing properly at 16. At 15, I sang something and played it in assembly. And my sister ran home, just as a one-off, and my sister ran home and said, Mum, Yasmin played something, sang something in assembly and played, and everybody went mad. And that was when my mother thought, aha. And then, this takes us to the concerts I did last year. For the next 2 years, she taught me all of Barbara Streisand's repertoire. And I sang all of those songs between 16 and 18. And then that's when I really did my groundwork in terms of playing and singing.
So you obviously had confidence then, because for a child to stand up in front of loads of people and sing on their own is
I was sitting playing. I had the piano as my...
But everyone focused on you, and you think,
But you know what that was? And again, interesting, is that I was such an accomplished pianist by the time I was 16 that all my confidence has always been in the piano. So no one can tell me anything about the piano. I think that's, again, when you start young and you really know your stuff and you know your instrument.
But what about the singing? Did you have singing tuition or was that just come
the singing, self-taught? I didn't have that kind of confidence with singing because I came to it so much later. So I was always a pianist who sings rather than a singer who accompanies herself. In my mind, I'm just a piano player who happens to sing. But everybody was making a fuss about the singing. And I was like, well, what about my piano playing? But it was the confidence with the piano that then allowed me to... And then, funnily enough, I didn't have any lessons at all. I went straight from the age of 18. Instead of going to university, I was already getting jobs in London on the circuit.
And how did they come about? Did you get yourself an agent or something like that?
Well, because remember, all my life, my mother had been taking me for talent competitions and things. Mm-hmm. And then that's when she worked for... which was personnel at the time at the BBC... Do you remember?
Yes,
I do. And she worked there, and she heard about these in-house this audition for the big time, and when I was 16, she called up and internally and said, "Oh, can Yasmin, my daughter, come and do this?" And that's how I got into all the professional side of it.
And what was the big time?
That was the Sheena Easton thing I spoke about in the concert,
yes,
where they chose me to do what Sheena was doing it sensibly, but then I decided it wasn't really for me, even though my mother wanted it, bless her, and I just thought, no, it's not, I'm not a little pop star because I want to play piano and do my thing.
Sure.
And turned it down, and then they chose Sheena, and the rest is history with her.
And how did you feel about learning these Barbara Streisand songs?
I loved it, because the thing is, at the time, I don't know if you remember, there were no singers, or very few, that had that sort of range. And so I was able to teach myself singing those kind of songs with that range. I mean, now there's loads of girls who can sing like that, you know, sort of Celine Dion and Christina Aguilera. But at the time, there wasn't anyone like that. So I was singing these incredibly difficult songs without actually realising how hard they were. And it was only until I was in my mid-20s when I met Pete that I started actually doing formal lessons.
And so what was your first professional gig?
That's a really good question. I actually, Pete would be able to answer that question because he logs every gig he's ever done.
This is your husband. But,
this is my husband, who's a bass player, yeah.
And how did you meet him?
I met him because he was the band leader for the Royal Garden Hotel, and they have a 10th floor restaurant, and he ran the band there. Gloria Hunniford was one of their huge fans. And he was looking for a singer and a piano player to play in between his band when they were having coffee or dinner or whatever. And I went and auditioned for him. And he listened to me, and the first thing he said was, "You really turn me on." Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, yeah, right, I know your type. But he meant musically.
Did you ask him that at the time?
I was too scared. I was so green and so young and kind of didn't really... all I'd known was, you know, I'd been hothoused in this environment, but now I was terrified. But he just offered me the job, and then we got married 3 months later.
3 months later? Wow, that was quite a whirlwind courtship then.
It was the music, and we realised that we both loved Ray Charles, and we thought, that's it, why don't we just do it?
Do you find, though, being married to someone who's equally interested in music, that you're expected to give feedback, whether good or bad, on each other's performance, and does that cause problems, or do you just support each other, whatever?
It's really weird, because at gigs, people never realise we're married, and that's always astonished me. And I think that's because we act as professionals together, and we have a good boundary where that's concerned. And I think that made us equals, even though there was a big age gap between us. It made us equals because we can both hold our own. But the weird thing about it, and I think this is rare, is it's about the only thing we never argue about. We have exactly the same feelings, values, thoughts about music. And we argue about everything else, but never music.
Oh, well, that's really good. But also, we have to say that he also founded with his brother, drummer Mike Giles, the progressive rock band King Crimson,
didn't
he?
That's right. He was one of the founder members. And people think it was Robert Fripp, but actually they auditioned Robert Fripp from The Melody Maker. They put an ad in for a keyboard player, and they couldn't find anyone. So they got they said, oh, well, guitar. And he came along. And then the three of them formed what was called Giles, Giles and Fripp. And then Pete did... It sort of morphed into King Crimson. And when it did, Pete left because he didn't want to... He just felt that the whole music business thing was not something he wanted for various reasons. You know what bands are like. Mm-hmm. And then he went back... He did the second album with them and another album later. But
had he just left King Crimson when you met him?
No, that was quite a while ago.
Oh, okay.
It was quite a while ago, yeah. He had done several jobs since then. He'd been working in computers. He'd been working in law for 5 years as a managing
clerk. Wow, what a versatile man.
Yeah, he worked in criminal law for 5 years, and then he became full-time running this band. So, yeah, so he'd done a lot in his life by the time he met me. But yeah, he took me under his wing and thought, well, she's a musical talent, and let's do something together. Yeah.
How many years have you been together now?
Well, Alison, next year when we debut our CD of original songs, it will be our 30th wedding anniversary.
Wow. Well, congratulations for next year. That's quite a milestone.
So
isn't
we
it?
Thought it would be a good year to release the CD. Because and these concerts that you're going to talk about later that I'm doing are really a closure on all my London years of playing other people's songs. And I thought I'd pick the 70s because it's just the best era for songwriting.
Yeah, definitely.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think the 70s was so creative in terms of other decades?
I think before then... people sang other people's songs in the 50s. They weren't really writers as such. You know, you had the Gershwin and the Cole Porter, and it all came from that, didn't it? And then in the 60s, Elvis came along, and they were still singing other people's songs until the Beatles. And then, but it was the pioneering years in the 60s, wasn't it? The pioneers came through. It was all very happy and, you know, let's go out there and forge new territory. And it was the flower power years, mm-hmm. and all the fashion and all the rest of it, and the whole thing. And then in the 70s, everything became more introspective, and it started being about people's feelings and about their health and about their issues, and it all just became a much more internal thing. And then those songwriters reflected that by writing their own songs, so they were really autobiographical, weren't they?
Absolutely.
So people like Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, and it all became about what was going on inside rather than what was happening outside. And I think those songs, because they're expressing the way people felt, were really powerful, because it connected to the inner experience of other people, you know. And post-war children who may not have had a voice were suddenly having a voice, weren't they, through those singer-songwriters. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
So I just thought that was the best era. Mm.
Well, one of the reasons you're here is to talk about all the music and things you've done, so it would just be not right if we didn't actually play some of your music, Yasmin.
Sounds
I think.
Good to me.
So we're going to put in three tracks to our programme today. The first one is actually called Don't You Worry About a Thing. So here we go with Yasmin Jaffa.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
When you're looking to send important documents and packages, don't settle for second best. Choose Mailboxes etc. in Church Street, Weybridge. We offer you high street access to fast, reliable and internet trackable delivery services from world-class couriers, including UPS, FedEx, Parcelforce and DHL. We also offer a range of Royal Mail services and can pack your shipment so that it arrives safely. Around the corner, around the country, or around the world, big or small, Mailboxes etc. in Weybridge can collect, pack and ship it all.
Finding it hard to get your company's name heard in today's noisy marketplace? Cinegraphics can help you to be heard and seen, and most of all, remembered. We design products that put your name in front of customers every day of the year. We can place your logo on anything from pens to clothing. Just use your imagination and leave the rest to us. And as well as keeping your name in your customers' line of sight, it's a great way to say thank you for their loyalty. So give us a call on 01932 857 669 or visit Cinegraphics, that's cinegraphics.co.uk. Make your company stand out with Cinegraphics.
If you're passing Walton Community Hospital or near the halfway in Walton, then pop into the hospital coffee shop run by the League of Friends. Enjoy a nice cup of tea for only 60p or a delicious cup of coffee for only 70p. Plus a range of sweets, biscuits, soft drinks, crisps, cards and sundries. We're all volunteers so we can keep the prices low. That's a coffee shop at Walton Community Hospital in Rodney Road, Walton. Open from 10am to 4pm weekdays and from 2pm to 4pm on Saturdays.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hello there and welcome back to Just Women with me, Jackie Mitchell and Alison Florence. And today we're joined in the studio by professional singer and musician Yasmin Giles. And we just listened to Yasmin singing Don't You Worry About a Thing, which is going to be one of the tracks she's going to feature in her wonderful concert that's coming up on Friday the 10th of November and Saturday the 11th of November at Claygate Village Hall. And she's going to be joined by her husband, Peter Giles, and also a very well-known guitarist, Yasmin. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Yeah, sure. My husband's going to be playing bass, and the guitarist is an absolutely lovely guy called Ronnie Johnson, who worked as the guitarist and musical director for Van Morrison for 9 years. And he had a listen to the stuff. We met him through a friend, and he absolutely loved it and said, "Count me in."
Fantastic. Yeah. And so Pete's also going to be playing with you. So what's it like when you performing together?
Pete and I? I laugh a minute because we take our domestic situation onto stage. So if he plays a wrong note or anything goes awry, I just stop it and shout, "Pete!" But I think the audience really enjoy it because I think they like to see a husband and wife's domestics.
And he also does the sound engineering, doesn't he?
He does. He is a sound engineer, yeah, because he'll be producing the album of original songs next year. So he'll be doing the sound as well as operating a drum machine, as well as playing bass, as well as singing.
Well, so, as I said earlier, it's very versatile.
Typical Gemini.
Yeah, and yes. So the show is actually called To the 70s and Beyond, and there's some incredible role call of artists that you're going to feature, including Joni Mitchell, James Taylor, Billy Joel, Elton John, Dire Straits, Randy Newman, just to name a few. Yes. Are there any of those that are your particular favourites, and how did you actually pick who you're going to sing?
Do you know what? It's an incredibly good question because we've got about 300 songs, probably more, that we've built up over the years we were in London. And when I came to choose the repertoire, I thought, I just can't do this. There's just too many people. What can I do? And I thought, well, let's start off by choosing one song from each of the artists I'd named. And I've managed to whittle it down, but I'm going to have to overrun the hour of the second set just to try to get everything in and minimize our talking. But what was interesting is when we did our first rehearsal, Pete and I, we finished and we were such a high, we were virtually sort of hanging off the ceiling. And I said to him, I don't understand why. I mean, we've been playing this stuff for years. And we figured out it was because we cut out all the things that are the things we usually call fillers as musicians. And we're just doing our very favourite tracks, and doing them back to back was phenomenal because it was just, it's like sort of skimming the cream off, you know, the top of the coffee or something. We were just having the best stuff that we loved. I mean, obviously other people would maybe choose other songs, but we particularly love those.
So that is your concert that you're doing in a couple of weeks, but let's go back to when you were actually sort of growing up and in work and things.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult actually to earn a living with music initially, isn't it? So what did you do when you sort of first went out to work? Where did you go?
When I started, I went straight because I had done a course. My mum had got me a course at the BBC between the ages of 16 and 18, so O-levels and A-levels, so typing, shorthand typing. So I trained there. And then the most amazing thing happened is when I left school, I did some temp work because I was a trained secretary. But then I managed to get a secretarial job working for the head of documentary features at the BBC in Kensington House. And I went right back into the department that had produced The Big Time. And I was then working in that documentary department with The World About Us, The Sky at Night, The Holiday Programme, That's Life, and all those people and all those producers. People like Roger Mills, the 40 Minutes programmes. And it was phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And so I did 3 years there working for Will Wyatt, who was the head of documentaries.
And didn't you miss the music?
I was always doing gigs, Jackie. I was always doing gigs at night. So I'd go 7 till 7 at the BBC, including travelling, and then go on and do a gig at night. And there's a nightclub in London, I don't know if it still exists, called Xenon. Does it still exist?
I remember it. I used to go there, yes.
Yes. Well,
might have heard Jasmine.
I might have.
The hours were 11 till 3. 11 in the night to 3 in the morning. Mm. So I would do my whole day and then go and do a... And eventually I realised after 3 years, I thought, I can't sustain this anymore. I've got to either choose... I've got to choose one or the other.
So and of course you chose the music.
Yes.
Did they actually offer you any opportunities? Because obviously BBC people must have known that you were interested in music. Did that actually flag up anything for them to offer you while you were there?
There was, when I worked for Will, there was a producer called Richard Denton, and he was doing a documentary on Corby in Northamptonshire, and he was supposed to write the signature tune for a new programme called Food and Drink. And do you remember that?
Absolutely.
And he couldn't do it because he had to keep going to Corby all the time. And I obviously worked in the department. So I rushed into Will and I said, please let me do it. And he said, I shouldn't say this if he's listening, but he said, oh, don't be silly, you can't do it. And I said, I can. I said, please let me do it. And he said, no, it won't. And I said, okay, look, just tell me what's required, and if I can do it, let me try. And he said, we want 30 seconds of intro and outro music, and we need it now. And so I went home that night, and I wrote something, and I timed it, and it was 29 and a half seconds long. And I took it back on a cassette. Do you remember those?
Yes, indeed.
And put that on his desk. And he listened to it and he just said, I don't believe it.
He didn't believe you composed it.
Yeah, he didn't believe I did it. And I played and sang it. And then I re-recorded it in the studios at BBC. And they used it for the first two series of Food and Drink.
Did they pay you for it?
Yes. Moving on.
Yes, moving on. And then also, you mentioned earlier...
It was actually EMI. I had to sign something and I...
You mentioned That's Life. Didn't you audition for that as well?
That was earlier, though, wasn't it, when I wasn't at the BBC?
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, that was later. Yes, then when I worked, just before I started working at the BBC, Esther Ranson called my mum, based on The Big Time, and she said, we're looking for a piano player for That's Life. And so I did that audition with Victoria Wood. And we had to write our own songs. And Victoria wrote this really jolly, happy, you know what she's known for, this really jolly, happy song. And I wrote this song about an old woman dying in a rocking chair.
Ah, okay.
And I think Victoria was a tad funnier than I. And I think that's what they were looking for the programme. But I thought it was actually really sweet of Esther to remember me and call me and give me that opportunity.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I hear you actually got the offer of appearing in Lion King.
That was absolutely bizarre.
And you turned it down. I can't believe that.
I know.
Why did you turn it down?
Well, I've got to tell you first how it happened. Is that Pete and I decided that we'd had enough of London because I was born and brought up there and we had done all our work there. And basically there was nowhere we could go in London where we couldn't have said we played there, everywhere and anywhere. And there was a lot. It was a year before the congestion charge. Do you remember? And it was just building work going on all the time because we lived in Clapham. And we thought, right, now's the time to get out, and we'll get out and go and make our CD of our own songs. And sorry, I can't remember what we were talking about.
Why did you turn down the part in The Lion King?
And in the first couple of years, we moved to Claygate in Esher. We were still commuting in to do gigs, and we got a job to do the launch of the new bar at the Mandarin Oriental in Knightsbridge. And our agent phoned up and said, look, there's this gig and there's a grand piano in the bar. Would you and Pete go and play for the launch? So that's the gig. And the casting agent for The Lion King was at the launch. And she came over to me in the break and said, you have the perfect voice and the perfect look for Nala. Would you do it without audition? I'm offering it to you on the spot. And it'll be 3 months in the West End and three months, you don't know this, Jackie, do you? And 3 months in LA.
And I said no straight away. And then she said, it's shitloads of money.
And that didn't change your mind either.
And of course, you know, Pete and I have never had any money. And we were living in rented accommodation and still are. And I just said no. And I thought, I've got a lot of friends who have done West End shows. Mm. And they say that it just becomes like a job. Mm-hmm. And I thought, here am I. I've got complete freedom to play what I like, do what I want. And I just could not nail myself down to it.
But it was only 6 months, though.
Yeah, but it wasn't. It wouldn't have been. Because I know that these things, once you go abroad and then I would have been away, my husband wouldn't have come with me. Mm-hmm. So I'd have been away from him. And that would have been me on a different career. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I never wanted to be a musical theatre person. You know, and I've had no regrets, can you believe? I thought it was lovely to have been offered.
Yeah.
I really do, you know.
So was Pete in the same agreement as you then?
Pete didn't
want you to do it.
Do you know, when it comes to important things like that, Pete and I don't discuss things. Mm-hmm. We discuss little things, not big things. Mm-hmm. If it's a big thing like that, he was there, but I never went to talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. I just went and told him afterwards that I was offered this, and I turned it down.
And what did he say?
Pete just supports whatever. He knew why I had. And he said, well, it's. I can see it's not you, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
But she, interestingly, she said to me at the time, the casting agent at the time said, you'll be able to buy your own house and everything. And maybe if I'd offered that now, it might be slightly different. But no, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. No, but I was happy to be offered it. I was happy to be offered it.
Can't be many people who said that, can there, really?
No.
She wasn't happy about it, let's put it that way.
What an accolade, eh?
And to do it without an audition as well is just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But so, it's really nice that you're not looking back and saying, oh, I wish I'd done that now.
I'm not that sort of person, Alison.
That's very good, isn't
not
it?
Not about anything.
No.
Because I always can see the lesson in why something happened. And genuinely, if I did regret it, I would say that I regretted it. Mm. But I don't.
No, good.
I don't, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to hear another of your songs now. Now, this one's called Ricky, Don't Lose That Number. And would you like to tell us a bit about this one?
Oh, it's a Steely Dan song. Right. All those Steely Dan fans out there will know it. And we're doing a couple of theirs, actually. Do It Again and Ricky, Don't Lose That Number. But we're huge fans of theirs. And, you know, once a Dan fan, always a Dan fan.
Right. Let's sing along then.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Hair Mechanics is Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group, with two superior salons, one in the heart of West Byfleet and the second in the Bourne Valley Garden Centre of Addlesden. Hair Mechanics offers hairstyling and finishing, beauty and holistic therapies, nail treatments, tanning and electrolysis. For our office promotions, contact information and more, please see our website, hairmechanics.co.uk, or call 01932 350 877. Hair Mechanics, Surrey's premier hair and beauty salon group.
The Hampton and Kempton Waterworks Railway runs every Sunday from 10:30 until 4 o'clock. Enjoy a narrow gauge steam ride. No need to book, just turn up and take the next train. Bring a picnic and watch the steam locomotives go by. Follow the signs to the Kempton Steam Museum off Snaky Lane, Hanworth. Check out our website, hamptonkemptonrailway.org.uk. The magic of steam on your doorstep, every Sunday, 10:30 till 4.
Do you own or work for a company? If so, you'll know that finding and keeping customers is at the heart of your success. With OmniLocal Business Networking, you'll have a unique opportunity to meet up to 30 potential customers over breakfast and connect with their customers too. So come and try a meeting near you for just £12, including breakfast and a free training seminar. Meetings are fast, informal and most of all profitable. Telephone 07900 31 26 34 or visit our website to learn more and see what people are saying about how we've helped them grow their business. Omni, that's O-M-N-I, Local Business Networking, where local businesses connect to succeed.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
So welcome back, everyone. And of course, we've got a lovely guest in the studio, Yasmin Giles, and you've just been hearing some of her music. So let's talk a bit more about your own music and composing, because as well as being a great performer, you're also a composer as well, aren't you?
Yeah.
So what I was going to say is, how do you go about writing the songs? Do you write them with your husband? Does one do the words, one do the music, or do you share?
When I met him, he'd already written some songs which had been recorded with Giles, Giles and Fripp. So he was a writer, and he wrote songs on his own and with them, I think. But with me, I always was a writer. I wrote from the age of 16 when I started singing. As soon as I started singing and playing, then I started writing. And just kind of never recorded anything, really, just wrote. But then when I met him, he listened to my stuff and said it was all a load of rubbish. In that incredibly encouraging way that some men have. Mm. But we just wrote because we were playing other people's songs all the time. But then I would have the basic ideas, because the idea was for us to write together. So I'd have the basic ideas and then he would sort of flesh it out. So we would then write together. But I had the germ of the idea.
So how would you actually go about writing a song? How would you get an idea of saying, oh, I'd like to write a song about that?
Do you know what? I do it by just simply a title. Like sometimes we'll be having a drink or something and he'll just say a line and I'll think, wow, that's a great title for a song, and then I might write a song around it. Or I'm just sitting noodling on the piano and I just get ideas.
Hardest part, writing the words or writing the tune that goes with it?
I think it's a bit like the thing with Paul McCartney. Do you remember when he wrote Yesterday? Mm. And he wrote the tune, but he didn't have the words. And he said, so he called it Scrambled Eggs. Scrambled Eggs. Scrambled Eggs. And I think it's a bit like that. So we'll work on something as an idea and then maybe write a few lines, and then it changes and develops.
So the majority of songs, you'd have the words first before you would develop the tune, would you?
No, I usually get the... Because of being, you know, primarily a piano player, I'd get the musical idea first, and then I'd think, oh, yes. It really, you know, it just depends. It depends. There's so many ways of doing it.
So how many songs have you written so far, then?
60. Pete and I, we've got 60 songs waiting to be recorded in our personal Giles archive. So you can imagine how we are chafing at the bit at the moment to want to get these concerts done, as much as we love it, closure, and move on next year and get on with our...
How many tracks will this new CD have?
So the first CD that we're going to do together will be 10 songs, and all original songs, and produced by Pete in our own studio. We've got our own recording studio that we bought with us from London, and co-produced by me, and everything written by us and played by us.
So it's going to be difficult, isn't it, out of the 60 to
No, find... no, we have chosen the 10 songs.
Oh, you have chosen them. Was that difficult?
Yeah, yeah. No, really, because we just... Those 10 songs came to me all in one go. They all came as a package, funnily enough, and they're all related in some way. So do you remember the old concept albums of the 70s? Like, I don't know if you remember sort of Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh,
they
yes.
They had a
yes.
theme, the yes. albums, didn't they? And Kate Bush's Hounds of Love and stuff, they have themes rather than separate songs. Mm-hmm. And they used to call them concept albums because they had this theme. And that's what this album is like. It's like, oh, there's a thread of something that's running through, but I can't say what that thing is. Because that would be giving it too much away.
And so what's your kind of timeline on this?
Well, because our anniversary is in June, we're kind of looking to that as a release date and maybe doing a little launch party around that sort of time.
So. And then will you go on tour with it?
And then we will play everywhere and anywhere that we can. And then hopefully just get on with the second album and just start churning them out.
Do you have an agent or something that arranges all the venues for you?
Funnily enough, have you been in our house, Alison?
No,
because we were speaking about that in our kitchen just yesterday.
How spooky. I didn't.
Are you sure? You weren't a fly on the wall then?
Wow. Not that I can remember.
I thought I saw you. That is something that, because normally I've done all the work for getting everything and with a great team of friends and crew, but I've realised that actually from next year it's going to be too much for me to do both, and I think we're going to concentrate on getting the album done, and once it's done then we'll look to getting someone to helping us with the getting it out into the world with gigs and
what sort of venues will you be wanting to play at?
Do you know, we've never thought... musicians like the smaller venues. I mean, we come from the Ronnie Scott's, Pizza Express in Dean Street, that kind of clubby vibe.
Yeah.
And those small venues are just fantastic. I love the Rose Theatre in Kingston and the Dominion in Tottenham Court Road. Do you remember? Nothing really huge.
No, not huge theatres.
No, not with great plasma screens where you can't... where you want to be able to see the musicians and feel their vibe and relate to them somehow. And that's why in these concerts at the Village Hall I'm going to be having some tables with candles and make it sort of like a jazz club type atmosphere. Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. So
do you think you'll actually miss singing the works of people like Barbara Streisand?
No, because I think doing the concerts, having done them for so many years, and having done the concerts, that was my way of getting closure on it. And I feel now that it is closed with the Barbara stuff. And now it will be once I've done these concerts.
Yes.
And I also, there's... Because we deconstructed everything and put it back together in our own way, there's nowhere to go with these songs now. There's nothing more we can do to make them better and improve them. So it seemed quite natural to just move on now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so out of all these artists that you're going to be featuring at your concerts on Friday the 10th and Saturday the 11th, do you have a particular favourite?
I think Joni Mitchell has got to be right up there with one of my personal favourites. I think she's absolutely unique, masterful and original writer. And I think they just don't produce them like that anymore. But I think she's astonishing. And I think James Taylor's wonderful. I think Paul Simon as well. We're doing a Paul Simon song that's not so well known. And then all those great bands like the Doobie Brothers and Donald Fagen, who are all piano players and singers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
well, it sounds really exciting. So tickets are £18.
Yeah.
And you can get them online from buytickets.at/TSAB/118515. And we'll put those details on the Brooklands Radio Facebook page.
Yes.
But they can also phone you, can't they, and email you. Could you give us those details?
Yes, sure. So my mobile number is 07986 352501, or you can email me at Yasmin, which is Y-A-S for sugar, M-I-N-E, giles@gmail.com.
Well, that's amazing. Have you got any sort of plans for the future after that? Are you going to say give it a year to see whether that's the sort of thing you like, or you're going to be convinced that that's what you want to do, is to travel around with your own music?
Oh, no, I think that that's what we always planned. And the fact that we haven't had children and have kept ourselves, for various reasons. Mm. I think we're both dedicated to a musical life. Brilliant. So we're really looking forward to our next incarnation.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I must say that the hour has gone really quickly.
Yes, hasn't it, just?
And I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Unfortunately, when the microphones have been switched off, you've missed Jackie and I trying to sing, but I don't think we're the same quality as Yasmin.
No, I don't think so.
At all, so it's probably quite a good thing. So thanks very much to Yasmin for coming in to tell us about her life in music and also about her upcoming concert on the 10th and the 11th of November in Claygate Village Hall. Time to say goodbye. So from me, Anna from Florence, it's goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Jackie Mitchell.
And to take us up to the news, we have another song from Yasmin, and this is Killing Me Softly.
Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, why not keep up to date with the Sound of Surrey by listening live at brooklandsradio.co.uk or through our free mobile app.